Episode 50. No, that's not it. Dang it. This is episode 48. 50 will be next week, right in time for the 4th of July. So get hyped. But now get hyped for episode 48. What am I going to call this? What's in your head? Because it's about schizophrenia. Brother Trucker Book Club podcast. Yes. Brought to you by nothing and no one except for me, your host, Graham Bradley. Ready and... So things are finally, excuse me, dry and windy in northern Utah the last 2 weeks. So if I randomly drop a fat sneeze on you, just know that I'm trying to lend to the authenticity and extemporaneous nature of this program. So I'm on break at work, and I wanted to get this episode out today because it is Wednesday. I had a stretch there for a while where I was getting episodes recorded like a week ahead of time. And then, family stuff happened, and so I'm just kind of shooting from the hip. I was going to record last night. I had this cool idea to just go hang out in the backyard, but the wind picked up, and it would have been hell on the microphone. So I stayed in my office, and I did some live streaming while I was painting. And now, today, we are going to talk about books. So right now, what am I reading? A graphic novel that I'll tell you about when I do the end of the month episode, and then I'm listening to a nonfiction, not biographical, it's not a biography, it's more like a history, because the subject of the book is a guy who doesn't do interviews and doesn't talk to people, but it's about Calvin and Hobbes, the comic, and it's really cool that I'm reading this on the tales of that, on the tale of that Schultz book from last week, from Monday, because, Bill Watterson was heavily influenced by Schultz. I mean, anybody who did comics alongside or after Schultz was heavily influenced by him. I don't even do comics, and I'm influenced by him. And so, you know, having some context for the impact that Schultz had on comics and how he just came in and took it over really helps me to see how Watterson stacks up in comparison. But it's a fascinating book, and I'm learning more about the history of the strip of Calvin and Hobbes and how it affected the comics industry in the 80s and 90s. About halfway through it, I'll probably do a review of it later, we'll see. But the reason it's timely is I had planned this episode last week and decided to finally do it today. The two books that I'm talking about today are novels that both deal with schizophrenia, and one of them is tied in heavily with Watterson's Calvin and Hobbes comic. The author is a lady named Martine Levitt. I think she's Canadian. That or she just decided to set the story in Canada. But the main character is a kid named Calvin. He's 17, and his whole life has been kind of, you know, intertwined with Calvin and Hobbes. He was born on the day that the last strip was published, and then his grandfather gave him a Hobbes plushie, a stuffed tiger. It couldn't have officially been a Hobbes plushie because Watterson didn't license anything. The only officially, like, legally permissible Calvin and Hobbes reproductions are the books themselves. Any other merchandise, especially those dumb urinating Calvin logos and stickers that have thankfully kind of gone out of fashion. Those are illegal, technically. But anyway, so this kid, you know, his whole life has been Calvin and Hobbes, Calvin and Hobbes. He even, you know, grew up with a best friend named Susie, a girl, lives down the street. Well, the hitch of it is that this Calvin is diagnosed with schizophrenia. Now, if your knowledge of schizophrenia is based on movies and TV and pop culture, you might be thinking that he's got split personalities or different personalities inside himself. Schizophrenia... so far as it works in this story and the other book that we're going to talk about today and what I know of it, just from reading some technical stuff online, it's, you've got a filter in your brain that, you know, non-schizophrenics, us normie folks, that allows you to distinguish between things that are real and things that aren't, things that you're imagining and so on and so forth. And schizophrenics don't have that. So, you know, they'll see things and they can't tell the difference between what's real and what's not. As to the severity that reaches or what form it takes, I suppose there's a spectrum of that and it's open for interpretation. But in the case of our boy Calvin here, he sees Hobbes, a tiger that nobody else sees. Tiger talks to him. reveals things about his psyche, what have you. The point is that Calvin is, you know, in a place mentally where he wants to be cured of this, and he thinks that the way to do it is to go find Bill Watterson and have him draw one final strip wherein, you know, Calvin says goodbye to Hobbes. The characters say goodbye to each other, and that will let this real life Calvin, you know, get rid of the Hobbes that's in his head. Now, this is me keeping some things in the box for you, not pulling it all out discovery-wise, because this is all, you know, jacket flap stuff. This is all the concept of the book. The real meat and potatoes of it is the form that this trek takes. Like I said, the book is set in Canada. It's on the north shore of Lake Erie, which is, it is, right? Lake Erie? That's the shore that is north of the state of Ohio. And Bill Watterson lives in Cleveland. He's from there. So the idea that this kid has is, you know, he wants to walk from Canada over to Ohio and get around to Cleveland and meet Bill Watterson. And as I said, Watterson's famously reclusive. He doesn't grant interviews. He doesn't license his material. He cut down the strip at the height of its popularity. He didn't want it to go forever. He, you know, in his own words, he accomplished everything he set out to do with it. And shoot, if I'm making $1 million a year off of books, you know, 25 years after it went out of print in the comic papers, then heck yeah, you know, I'd do the same thing. But, you know, I'm also an attention whore, and I would love that attention, so I wouldn't do it the same way Watterson did. But I found the trek itself to be a fascinating journey. It was riddled with hardship and friendship and camaraderie. You know, Susie decides to join Calvin. She knows she can't talk him out of it. And you see a very, you know, pure form of love between the two of them, the way that she looks out for him while he's, you know, trying to survive this trek to go meet Bill Watterson. So check that one out, Calvin by Martine Leavitt. It was one of my best reads of 2018. Yeah, I think I read it last year. And, you know, I purchased a hardcover copy for my personal library because it was just that good. So check that out. Now, here's an author that I've mentioned before, and I'm going to be getting into a couple of his series over the course of this podcast. Dan Wells, best known for his John Wayne Cleaver trilogies. There's two of them. The other one wrapped up, I want to say, in 2017. He's a horror writer, but he also does sci-fi. He's done some kids stuff. But, you know, horror is how he broke into writing, you know, how he broke into publishing, I guess. First book came out about 10 years back. This one came out in 2011, and it's called The Hollow City. When you look it up, there were two books with that title that came out within a few years of each other. If you remember that book in the movie called Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, that one ended up being a series, and I think the second one, that was also called The Hollow City. This one is different, nothing to do with that. I think I remember hearing an interview with Dan Wells a couple of years ago where he was saying that shut up, Doug. Text message from my dispatcher. He wanted to call it something else. He wanted to call it Pane of Glass because, you know, it was thematic to what was going on in the story, you know, looking through a pane of glass and seeing things distorted on the other side. But, you know, focus testing, publishing, editor panels, they decided that it wasn't as good a title as The Hollow City, which also worked for a different element of the story. Main character is a guy named Michael Shipman, and he is a paranoid schizophrenic. So not only does he see things that aren't there, usually he ends up having these hallucinations of these things wanting to hurt him. He's got, you know, he'll wake up and he'll be in the middle of a delusion where, you know, he thinks he's being tortured or something. And for the first part of the book, he is off his meds. And, you know, one thing leads to another. He gets checked into a facility. They get him on, you know, mental suppression medication type stuff to help him get his hallucinations under control. Things are going fine until he starts seeing things again, and he realizes that, you know, he's not beating the medicine. Some of the things that he was seeing were real, and there are these monsters that are out there, these, you know, kind of faceless monsters that nobody else can see except for him. And again, keeping some things in the box, there's a discovery process here. He decides to go out and do something about it, and you know, ends up making this discovery that's just kind of, you know, earth-shattering in terms of what these things really are, what form they take, you know, what they feed on, what got their attention. I myself am not a horror reader. I don't watch horror movies. It's not out of squeamishness or anything. I just think that it's, in a way, it's a lot like, well, let me put some qualifications on this. Yeah, in terms of like, you know, popular horror in films, it hits the same note and it works mechanically the same way as pornography, where it's just to trigger you with something that's visceral and basic and doesn't really require anything inventive or creative of the writer or the producer of it. You know, pornography, nudity, stuff like that, it's just, oh, look, here's naked people and they're doing stuff. Okay, well, yeah, well, very creative. It's been there since the beginning of time. With horror, same thing. It just triggers a different section of your brain where, you know, jump scares and scary, grotesque monsters and stuff. I think horror that I do enjoy, you know, like Dan Wells' stuff, and I would be really keen to read stuff that works more on this level, is stuff that hits you with a psychological bent that doesn't really depend on grotesque monsters and tentacles sliding out of the darkness and creepy stuff underneath the bed, but rather just these massive shifts in worldview and in world reality where the founding bedrock underneath your feet of what the world is and how it works and who's in it and how we got here just gets yanked out from underneath you, and you're presented with this existential threat that can only be countered in one very specific and difficult way, and not even in like an action movie way, but in like a psychological way. He did this well with another one of his novels that I'll review in a future episode, where again he takes things that exist, you know, in our real world and just scares the daylights out of you with them by showing, okay, well, what if this happened and then what would we do? It's like, holy crap. I will put a caveat on this, not really for content. There might have been like one or two bad words in it. He doesn't really, you know, make that a mainstay of his work. But if you're walking into these books, you know, these Dan Wells books, and expecting them to just be, you know, plain Jane sci-fi stuff, set that aside and be prepared for something that is, you know, in the realm of the paranormal. With his John Cleaver books, I think that's what turned a lot of people off, because the elevator pitch was really similar to the Dexter books, the guy he's a serial killer who hunts other serial killers. The John Wayne Cleaver books were kind of similar to that. It's a kid who's a sociopath and is trying to tamp down his serial killer tendencies, but when a serial killer shows up in his small Midwest town, John's got to use what he knows to find this guy and put him down. But there is a paranormal bent to it. In the John Wayne Cleaver books, there's a monster. It's not just some serial killer. It's a monster who kills in a specific way. In The Hollow City, they're not monsters so much, but there's a paranormal element to it. And it's worth the price of discovery. So check that one out, The Hollow City by Dan Wells. He did some research on the whole schizophrenia thing so that, you know, he could present it properly and accurately, and then shape a really cool story around a character who has that condition and is trying to cope with that while he's also trying to cope with some very real things that are dangerous to us. So that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in, and check back on Friday for Tales from the Road. Thanks, guys. Drive safe. See you out there.